This is Amy Oldrick, Vice President of Risk Management for Antom Risk, and today we're going to discuss the top five trends that we identified during physician practice risk assessments.
In the physician practice risk assessments, one of the things we try to do is to trend in kind of a broad category the types of issues that we see that could lead to poor patient outcomes or patient injury. The top five that we have really found to be common throughout different types of specialties, different types of primary care, different types of organizations, be it teaching or non-teaching organizations, are as follows: infection prevention, medication safety, environmental safety, equipment safety, and lab compliance and handling.
Starting off with infection prevention, would you tell everyone some more about that and then maybe give a couple really good examples?
One of the top findings in the physician practice risk assessments is infection prevention. And one of the things that we look at in these practice assessments are sterilization processes, disinfection processes, and then cleaning. And as you know, those are different types of levels of cleaning. So when I talk about sterilization processes, what I'm really looking at is autoclaves in the physician practices. And when we talk about an autoclave, one of the things that I always do is to pull the IFUs, which is another commonly called term is the user's or owner's manual. And when you look in that, there's actually in the glossary, it'll tell you where your maintenance requirements are. And for autoclaves, depending on the age and the brand, there can be weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annual maintenance. So what we want to look at is, one, before we ever look at instruments, do you maintain the autoclave the way the manufacturer requires it to be maintained in order for it to give the best product that it can give? So when we look there, I look at those manuals, and then I look at the maintenance logs and the cleaning logs. And do we have a log of what we've done and how we've done it? And then the next thing I look at is the instruments. So I look at packaged instruments and unpackaged instruments. Are the instruments intact? Are the packages intact? Is there a quality control on those packages? Is it a test strip, or either do you have the package that changes colors once it actually has reached the sterilization temperature? And then looking at the integrity of the instruments themselves. I have actually been in practices where they were reprocessing rusted instruments and using them on patients. So that infection prevention, high-level sterilization process, high-level disinfection. So for your practices such as urology or ENT or endoscopies, like you're in your GI practices, how are you processing your scopes? And are you following all the right steps and procedures in the processing of the scopes to decrease the level of infection to patients that are in your practices? And when we look at this, depending on the type of high-level disinfection that you're using, are you using the correct PPE? Is it in a exam room, or have you got a closet or some sort of room that you have actually called your disinfecting room? And then when we look at the processes, how do you mark your scopes, clean or dirty? Do you have a way to label your scopes so that we know what scope was used on what patient? Are there logs for the cleaning? Are there logs for the use? Do you have your maintenance logs for those? And then we look at this general cleaning of equipment or cleaning of rooms. So even if you're not in a specialty practice, if you're in a family practice that conducts INDs, you may have an autoclave there. But if you're in any practice, you have to clean equipment and you have to clean rooms. So looking at the tables, watching a patient being discharged and seeing how that room is cleaned as that patient's discharged. Looking at your lobbies, are your lobbies cleaned? If you are in an OB practice and you have a handheld fetoscope, are you cleaning that between patients, and how are you cleaning it, and what are you cleaning it with? So infection prevention can go from just how you wipe down the counters, and are you following wet contact times, all the way to high-level disinfection or actual sterilization.
Next up is medication safety. Please talk about that one.
So medication safety, when we look at trends in medication safety, cover a really broad spectrum of medication handling. And one of the areas that we focus on is medication reconciliation. This really starts in your physician practice. It goes through your organization, and it ends in your physician practice. So when we are looking at medication reconciliation, what I want to know is, how are we reconciling medicines? Do we have staff that are saying, hi, Ms. Smith, have you had a medication change since the last time you were here? Or do we have staff saying, can you tell me if you're still on Coumadin? Are you still taking 2 milligrams on Tuesdays and Thursdays? Are you still taking 2.5 on Monday, Wednesday, Friday? So are the staff actually going through the medications, how it's being taken currently, and confirming that? And then it's not just driven by your clinical staff. It's driven by your providers. So when your providers come back in into that room to see that patient, are they also going back through to confirm those medications are correct? Another huge area where we see issues are with the sample medication programs. Do you have samples in your practice? And if you do, are you tracking those? Are you logging them in and out? Is someone making sure that the counts are correct on a monthly basis so that we can make sure that every sample that leaves our practice is documented so that we can trace that back? And what I try to explain is really with the sample medication program, our concern is not that you gave an expired medication. It's that if there's an FDA recall, you are legally responsible for the recall of that medication and getting in touch with those patients. If you don't have a way to track those sample meds, how would you do that? And I can promise you that the FDA will find out that you had them because the drug reps that bring those in log those to the practices by lot number. So when that goes out, that notification will come to you and then you will be responsible for making sure that that happens. And that has happened with several of our practices that we have assessed in the past. Another issue that we see are staff competencies around medication handling in the practices. One, are they educated to the difference between medications? We had an issue where we had staff that were administering pediatric flu vaccines to the elderly. So are they competent in the types of medications you have? Are they competent if you're giving Rocephin in your practices in medication calculation? Rocephin comes in a 2-gram vial, so they're having to reconstitute that and then figure out the calculation that they need to give based on what the physician ordered. Is someone in your staff going through your medications that you give in the practice to make sure that they're all in date? Is someone going through to make sure there have been no recalls? And then also for medication handling, if you use multi-dose vials, there is a CDC standard that multi-dose vials are only good for 28 days after opening. So if you have multi-dose vials in your practice, are they labeled with the initials and date that it was opened? And if so, are they discarded within that 28-day period or used within that 28-day period? So those are big areas that we see for offices that have vaccines for children. I look at their logs to make sure that their refrigerator logs are as they should be. I make sure that they have separated the vaccines for children from the private payer vaccines. So medication safety looks at a lot of things. And what we like to do is try to make it specific to your organization and how your organization handles medications and help identify the potential holes in those workflows so that we can help prevent that from reaching a patient.
Talking about environmental risks in a practice, what are some examples of those?
So when we're talking about an environmental risk in a practice, we look at slip, trip, and fall hazards. That's inside and outside, particularly in hallways in the practice. We go in a lot of practices who have scales, patient scales in the hallways, or have equipment plugged in the hallways, or may have a cord stretched across the hallway. Every state has a general liability standard around what is considered a trip hazard. For instance, in South Carolina, if there's a greater than 1/4 inch difference in the height between slabs of sidewalk and someone trips there, then you could be found liable for that. So what we want to look at is fall hazards, both inside and outside of the practice. Biohazard and sharps management. And when I say biohazard, specifically separation of clean and dirty. Do you have clean utility closets and dirty utility closets? How are you maintaining sharps? I've been in practices where there's surgical practices that see all ages from birth to death. And there are large sharps containers like used in the OR, but the lids aren't on them for convenience. But if a patient, a five-year-old or a three-year-old, reached their hand in there and were stuck, then you've got a blood and body pathogen exposure to this patient, and you don't know who the source is. So are we looking at safety in the environment?
All right, Amy, would you talk some about equipment safety in physician practices?
Yes, equipment safety. Actually, that was a huge eye-opener when I first started conducting the assessments, because there is a process in the hospital that all equipment is delivered to the docs. And if it's a biomedical type equipment, then it goes to your biomedical services and they sticker it and they do the safety inspection and make sure the calibration is correct. And then it comes to the department that you're supposed to be receiving, and someone comes in and does training for all the staff, and it's documented training and competency, and then you put that equipment into use. But that's not what happens in the physician practices. They will often have some sort of vendor come in. Yes, we love this. We want to buy that. And they buy it, and the vendor ships it straight to the office, and then there's no training or competencies. There's no documented training or competencies. We have staff using it. Biomedical services doesn't know it's out there. And then we're getting false negatives or false positives from these equipments because there has been no maintenance and no calibration. Equipment competencies is a big thing. I went into a pediatrics practice where staff were conducting the hearing screens. Anywhere from the age of 2 weeks up, there was no training or competencies for any of the staff in that. And they were using those hearing screenings to decide who they were going to refer to ENT in audiology. This is an area where there could be a false issue that was identified because we didn't conduct the test appropriately. And now parents are paying out of pocket to go to an office that they should have never been referred to. Or the equipment is not working appropriately, and or we didn't conduct the test appropriately, and we missed a sign that we needed to send a child to ENT. As you know, as children develop, one of the hearing hampers development of speech. So if there's a hearing issue that we missed, long-term growth and development could absolutely be affected by that. So equipment safety in the physician practices is something we really have to take a close look at.
Another consideration or topic of risk for practice assessments is laboratory compliance. Amy, would you give some examples for that topic, please?
Oh, absolutely. So lab compliance takes on the whole spectrum of labs. So from the time that a specimen is ordered all the way through the results process. So when we're looking at lab compliance, we start at that issue of ordering. One, how is it ordered? Two, if it's conducted or drawn in the practice, what is your specimen labeling and handling like? Having been an emergency room nurse for years, we collected our own specimens. So, you know, it's automatic to think, well, everybody knows that you label it at the bedside, and then there's two identifiers, and that you seal it in a biohazard bag before you walk out of the room. And I can guarantee you that's not happening in 100% of your practices. I have walked in labs where there were groups of blood tubings laid on counters, and not a single tube had a patient name or identifier on it. Not even a room number, which would be wrong, but there was absolutely no way to identify where that blood came from other than a staff member standing in there saying, oh, well, I brought them in, so I know that the one on the left is Miss Smith and the one on the right is Miss Jones. Do we want to treat patients based off incorrect or erroneous lab results? Because that's a great way for that to happen. And then in the lab handling process, we look at how you track those labs from the ordering to the in process to the completed, and how you are ensuring that those lab results are getting back. This is particularly a big issue when these labs are sent out and aren't conducted within the organization. So what is your process for those test results coming back in? Does it come into an electronic medical records fax queue? Well, then if so, who works that fax? Are they attaching it to the original order and then finalizing it on that original order so that it actually drops back to that provider so that the provider's reading that lab result and acting on it? Or is it scanned in as a media file and the provider has no idea that that result has come back? And then one of the big items that I see are quality control processes. So when you have a point of care test, such as your flu swabs, your strep throat, your blood sugars, are you maintaining that equipment and conducting quality controls as you should? Because if you don't, you could get false negatives or positives. And you can't treat patients off incorrect results because then you have the incorrect treatment. So that lab compliance and lab process is a really big component in our physician practices. And again, that's the doorway to admission to the hospital. So if you have a patient who you're running a lab result on in the office and it comes back as being positive for flu and strep, and it's a pediatric patient who looks to be in minimal to moderate distress, having those correct results may make the difference in that patient going home with a parent versus being admitted to pediatrics overnight. So it's a really big deal to make sure that process is compliant and it's handled correctly and that your staff are trained to handle it correctly.
So to recap, the top five trends that have been found in practice assessments are infection prevention, medication safety, environmental issues, equipment safety, and lab compliance. So to wrap up, Amy, would you talk about how someone could use these top five trends, whatever top five are found at their organization?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the things you have to understand when you're looking at these trends is really when we see a trend and we see issues in these practices, what am I thinking in the back of my mind as a risk manager or as a leader in a healthcare organization? Is one, how do these relate to patient injuries or outcomes? And then if they do translate into patient injuries or outcomes, as described earlier, then how does that impact our organization? So medication management claims. So when we look at national trends for the medication management claims, an average dollar for a medication management claim is $199,000. Diagnosis related, if you don't have correct test results or you don't order the correct testing or that testing doesn't get done, those claims are upwards of $286,000 per claim. We talk about environmental and, you know, you think slip, trip, falls, they're not that expensive, but they can be on average about $57,000 per claim for a fall that happens in that physician practice area. So as a leader, and we're talking about the types of findings we have, we need to think about how those translate. We need to think about how that translates to financial and reputational injury to our organization. And when you look at those types of risks, then the biggest thing you want to look at is, could we prevent this? And if the answer is yes, we could prevent it, then let's come up with a plan of how to prevent it. So we take these types of risks, and then we look at these trends, and then we use those to create our risk management plan for our physician practices. And it's just like the risk management plan that you have for the inpatient world of the hospital or the risk management plan you have through corporate compliance and internal audit. It's something that you work every year, you audit every year, and you use that for process improvement for your physician practices and overall for your organization.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you found the information useful. For other information about Anthem Risk and the services that we provide, please go to our website, anthemrisk.com.